Uranus, Houston, read you loud and clear.
Astronaut Jim Irwin talking to Charlie Duke Jim. There. Signal's a bit scratchy. About 7/10 of a mile away from Casper, says Orion.
Say again,
about
Charlie,
one
we still
kilometer.
Have excessive noise down here.
I say our range to Casper is about 7/10 of a mile.
And he's opening at 2.5. He put in some positive velocity to go up and above, come down and get with us.
Okay, we copy.
That was John Young who chimed in that
the total is lighted.
Ken Mattingly was putting in some posi-grade thrust to go up and above and come down with them. They're a little farther than the 30 meters we anticipated. They were instructed to stay about 100 feet. That's about 30 meters apart. At the moment, they are about 1 kilometer apart. Ken Mattingly, I'm sure, has been quite busy trying to troubleshoot the problem there with his main rocket engine during this 40 minutes or so behind the moon. As have several hundred people here in Mission Control over in one of the simulators trying to make the problem happen in a simulator.
We still don't have an answer, but people are working very feverishly.
That's Jim Irwin saying, we still don't have an answer, but people are working very feverishly. Jim Irwin, who was the lunar module pilot on Apollo 15.
Okay, thank
you. Dave Scott. That was...
It'll probably be a while before we get the station keeping anyway.
That's John Young.
Roger.
He says it'll probably be a while before we get to station keeping right alongside. That means then that during the 40 minutes behind the moon, they haven't quite come up alongside each other. We may hear another voice talking to Ken Mattingly. That would be astronaut capsule communicator Henry or Hank Hartsfield. You'll hear Ken Mattingly in Casper. You may hear him talk to Hank. That would be Henry Hartsfield, Jr., who is trying to pass along to him all of the information which the engineers working with the command module
are
able to muster. There was a standby to Ken. Quite a number of people here in Mission Control. Watching and trying to, waiting to pass up any solution to the problem as soon as they get something back from the simulator, which is a couple hundred meters away across
ahead,
the
Ryan.
Manned Spacecraft Center. Charlie Duke calling.
Yeah, we got an RCS system, a reg light. Pressure's helium is looking like 2300. The propellant is at 210. The fuel manifold and ox manifold is correct to make it 215 or 220. And everything else looks pretty good. Pressures are holding up. You think the burst disc is gone?
Roger, that looks that way to us, Charlie. Yes, Casper, this is Houston. Read you loud and clear.
Okay.
The problem is in Casper, the main rocket engine, the guidance for controlling the direction of thrust of the main rocket engine, both the automatic and manual thrust vector controls, that means the direction it's pushing, are out, or at least not operating stably. They're not stable. Ken Mattingly says he sees them fluctuating 1 or 2 degrees when he watches his control panel monitors of these gimbal motors on the main rocket engine. Now, they think that something in the navigation and guidance system, the stabilization control system portion of that, an electronic box associated with the guidance and navigation computer, they think something there may be feeding these fluctuating signals back there to the big rocket engine. As I reported once before, I believe this is analogous to pressing your foot down on the accelerator in a car. That would be firing the main rocket engine. And then turning loose of the steering wheel. You don't know in what direction the vehicle might go unless there is something steering it. Well, this, in essence, is a problem with the steering wheel for the main command module, for the mothership. It's all computer-controlled. There is a manual system which is used as backup, and even when the manual system is applied, the rocket motor back there in the rear of the command module, the big service propulsion system engine, the SPS engine as it's called, it is not responding properly. It is continuing to fluctuate just a bit, several degrees, in its mountings. That's as though the steering wheel controlling the wheels on your car were going back and forth.
Houston,
just a bit.
We're wondering where you got the estimate of 7/10 of a nautical mile range.
We got the rendezvous radar locked on if you want us to, or do you want us to turn it off?
No, that's fine.
The rendezvous radar in Orion, the lunar module, is locked on the command module, and they got that reading of 7/10 of a mile. That's just a bit over 1 kilometer apart, the two spacecraft. They've just come around the east side of the moon as you look at it from Earth, the right side, and they'll be coming around over the crater Tsiolkovsky, Humboldt, Mare Smithy. They're just on that east limb, Pasteur, in that area. And then they will.
You said Orion, Johnny and I have been talking about, we get to land this thing, we'd like to probably, ought to think about going to sleep first, and we get up into a full EVA tomorrow.
Roger, we concur down here.
There you heard Charlie Duke, who says he and John Young have discussed the idea that if they do get to land, they think they'd like to go to sleep first. They're pretty tired. That would mean canceling the first
Casper, this is
EVA scheduled for tonight.
We're recommending that you null the line of sight rates and fire 5 feet per second toward the LEM.
An instruction to Casper. Null the line of sight rates. In other words, work out the closing rate in the direction toward which you see the lunar module. In other words, stop where you are in reference to the limb. Whoops. There's a signal change, probably an antenna being switched. Spacecraft flight path. Very near the lunar equator.
Okay, Ken, we show you coming up on Paraloon now, so you'll be affecting your Apolloon. That's firm.
Coming up on Paraloon, meaning the low point of the flight path across the surface of the moon, and this thrusting by Ken Mattingly in the command module as he comes up alongside the lunar module. This will affect his apolloon, or his the high point of his orbit, when he moves 180 degrees around the moon to the far side.
Okay,
next,
that sounds
next time.
Good, Ken.
We're listening to Jim Irwin as he speaks to Ken Mattingly. We do not hear Mattingly's responses being piped into this particular communication system by our Apollo control.
We're hoping that.
Jim Irwin is the voice you hear talking to Ken Mattingly. Jim Irwin, who was the lunar module pilot.
The state vector was fairly accurate, Ken.
Irwin was lunar module pilot.
You'll be in Paraloon in 15 minutes.
Irwin, lunar module pilot on Apollo 15. Standing beside him is Ed Mitchell, who was lunar module pilot on Apollo 14. Stu Russo.
That's affirmative.
command module pilot on Apollo 14 there also, near the capsule communicator's desk in mission control. It looks rather quiet. The flight controllers are obviously waiting to hear from the back rooms and to hear the results of the tests being run in the simulator about 200 meters away.
Give us your position relative to the LAMP.
Irwin's asking Ken Mattingly his position relative to the lunar module now. He's apparently quite close. John Young says he was ahead of us, about level, about 6,500 feet out.
Your position is ahead.
And closing at 3 feet per second.
And he's opening at 2.5 on 1678.
Roger.
And 3 feet a second on the tape meter.
That was John Young in the lunar module making a report on the position of the command module. You can see him out the window, and you can also see him on his landing radar. His rendezvous radar, that is. The radar used to track that command module normally when you're coming up from the moon and to prepare and are preparing to dock or connect. Astronaut Fred Hayes also with the other capsule communicators.
Okay.
Fred
Stand
was
by.
Lunar module pilot on Apollo 13 and was the backup commander on this mission. He went through the training completely for this Apollo 16 mission.
Okay, on the COAS, I've got him foresighted there, and he's 355.59 from local vertical.
Okay, Casper, this is Houston. We're convinced that we want you to fire directly at the LAMP about 5 feet per second. We want to get a positive closing rate.
Jim Irwin bringing them in closer together now, telling him to come in closer. He wants to fire directly toward the LAMP. He wants the command module to fire at 5 feet per second toward the lunar module. When you hear the static like that, that is the main antenna on the lunar module as it begins to, as it locks in with the Earth and then as it drifts apart. There's been some small problem there keeping that thing exactly aligned with the Earth. It's believed that this was not serious enough to prevent a lunar landing, however. Repeating what the problem has been, the service propulsion system engine swings in several directions in its mountings in the back of the command module. There are gimbals driven by motors which swing the engine in several directions as the rocket is fired. Then this gimbaling is controlled by two systems, either a manual system or an automatic system, which goes through the computerized guidance and navigation system up in the command module. Apparently, some of the instructions to the big engine are erroneous. Some of the controls are causing some fluctuating signals to go to the main propulsion system rocket. This has prevented Ken Mattingly. That's Ken Mattingly asking a question there.
Do we copy?
First we've heard from him on our air-to-ground loop that we can hear in quite a while.
Good idea.
Can we show you in three?
That's Jim Irwin in Mission Control talking to him. And so anyway, since it has been impossible to properly control the direction of thrust or the thrust vector control for the service propulsion rocket, then everything has been held in abeyance. The lunar module has been told, don't go down yet. Let's work on this problem, because if the big engine, big rocket engine is out, we don't want to make a lunar landing. That, in essence, is what John Young and Charlie Duke are waiting to hear in the LEM. So Ken Mattingly has been trying to do everything he can to figure out what's caused that thrust vector control to cause some fluctuating signals to go into the instructions to the guidance of the main rocket. And engineers here on Earth, near mission control, hundreds of them, are working on simulations in the back rooms and over in the simulator building a couple hundred meters away from mission control. And in mission control, all of the flight controllers at their consoles are just waiting to hear the results of these tests. It has been reported that the astronauts can go up to 5 revolutions of the moon and before a decision to come home or to head back to Earth has to be made. That's 5 revolutions, 2 hours each revolution. About 10 hours can be spent working this problem out before a decision to come home has to be made to head on back toward Earth. The landing can still be made if they can get that service propulsion system guidance to operate properly. The LEM is ready to go down. John Young and Charlie Duke are all ready to go, just waiting for a go-ahead. You're listening to the Voice of America's coverage of the flight of Apollo 16. We're reporting to you from Mission Control, and let's listen to
standing by Terry here White. For a resolution of the apparent problem with the stabilization and control system aboard the command service module. Meanwhile, the two spacecraft are making the necessary maneuvers for rendezvous. Or it should qualify that to, say, station keeping. Right now, the rendezvous radar display shows a separation of some 1 nautical mile.
Mattingly has gone above.
Jasper, this is Houston. Hold up on that RCS maneuver.
Mattingly has gone above and forward of the LEM.
Hold up, Ken.
He's been told to hold up. Don't pull in any closer yet.
Okay, hold it there.
1 nautical mile. He'd be about 1.8 kilometers away now. Just a little less than 2. He was closing at the rate of about 1 meter per second.
The maneuver Mattingly was attempting was a 5 foot per second line of sight RCS maneuver toward the lunar module. Right now, he's ahead and below the lunar module by about 1 nautical mile, straight line distance. We would like to reemphasize that this will be strictly for station keeping. Lunar landing is still not positively ruled out at this time, depending on what decision is made on the reliability of the stabilization and control system to control the SPS engine on the service module. Continuing to monitor air ground from both spacecraft. This is Apollo Control, 100 hours, 24 minutes.
That was Terry White in Apollo Control, as you heard him reporting the position of Ken Mattingly as he's moved around above and out front, in front of the LEM, and as he has begun to close for station keeping, he's dropped a bit below. He's as far out in front there as 1.8 kilometers, about 1 nautical mile away. We're listening to communication here between Mission Control and Ken Mattingly. Everyone's standing up. It looks like another little discussion may be ensuing. Jerry Griffin has stood up from his control, his flight director's console, has moved over to talk to a guidance officer.
Jasper, this is Houston. You should know the line of sight rates.
He's asked Ken Mattingly to null the line of sight rates. In other words, stop right where you are. Don't get any closer in your line of sight distance.
Just keep a positive closing rate.
Oh, if you are closing, keep it positive, but don't let the rate change.
Okay. Fine. Why don't you tell me what to do there, John?
Okay. Press down, and I'll tell you which way the needle moves. Good.
Charlie Duke said, that's the wrong way, Ken.
Will you trust it?
That's firm.
Okay, trust away from the moon.
That was
doing it.
Charlie Duke and John,
or
John Young there, looking out the window, telling Ken which way to go.
You didn't get it corrected, Ken.
That's John Young.
How's that now?
Oh, it's just not moving very much at all.
Okay, that's a good place to stop?
No, it's going to be expensive, Ken, to do this, but you're going to have to thrust up.
Okay, I just need some gouges to wind, and I've got it nulled.
Okay, you don't have it nulled.
John Young in the limb talking to Mattingly.
That's, you've got 4 mm engine.
Expensive to do this means it's going to take a good bit of energy.
3 feet per second closing.
Three feet per second closing.
Still going down?
That's affirmative. You've got it to 3 mm. You've got it to 2 mm.
Astronaut David Scott has joined the group
at the radius. Now you got it, Ken.
At the communicators console.
Okay.
One of the antennas drifting out of alignment with the Earth, and you hear this frying sound, this noise. It will dissipate as it drifts back in line.
Now, like I'm drifting the other way.
Not according to my needles.
Okay, I'll believe your needles.
John Young is watching instruments or needles in the limb with his rendezvous radar showing the relative position and the closing rate of the command module, as they're coming in closer for station keeping. This is a much more complex thing than you might think. It's not like just bringing two airplanes together as they're flying along above the Earth. You're having to add to and subtract from the total energy of the spacecraft and its orbital velocity or flight path. And one spacecraft is in one orbit around the moon, another is in another, and you're trying to bring them together. Just a little thrust here may bring them together just for a few seconds, but the overall orbital path would then cause them to drift on apart again. So in order to really station keep, the two orbits have to be brought together. The overall orbits around the moon have to be identical. John said your rates are nulled, essentially, meaning your additional rate of closing, your change in your rate of coming together has not changed, has nulled, has zeroed. That means you're still drifting toward the lunar module at one set rate of speed, just about 1 meter per second.
Ryan, request you select the secondary transmitter and receiver.
Switching transmitters and receivers in Orion. So we get a noisy signal for a few seconds while that's being done.
Okay, Houston, Orion says that they have already selected.
Kim Mattingly reporting that Orion has selected their secondary transmitter receiver.
Read,
that's Charlie Duke checking in.
Read you loud and clear, Orion.
Okay, your flyby. How's the problem looking?
How's the problem looking, Charlie Duke asks. And we've already heard them suggest that the first extravehicular activity period be postponed. Duke and Young have come to realize that they're rather tired.
No answers yet. We're still looking at it.
If they do land, if they are given a go-ahead for landing, it appears that the first EVA will be postponed. That doesn't necessarily mean they'll stay on the moon an extra day. That probably means we would only have two lunar excursions and then lift off. Right now, we're waiting to see if we have a landing at all. If the command module, main rocket engine, guidance system, the control system to control the direction of thrust for the main rocket engine, if that can be repaired, problems of fluctuation in it can be solved.
Okay, Ken, you're at 5,600 feet, close at 4 feet a second.
John said he's 5,600 feet, closing at 57 feet per second. Oh boy, that's pretty fast. I believe that may have been buried in the static. 5,700 feet, closing at a very slow rate of speed, just a few, maybe about 1 meter per second. I don't think
this is Houston. We'd like you to open the primary power amp circuit breaker on 16.
Orion asked to open a circuit breaker.
It's open, Jim.
Roger.
The spacecraft are coming around right around the center of the moon now, right around the lunar equator. They'll be in touch with us for another 38 minutes before they go out of sight again around the moon. That lunar equator center position, they've come across
Orion, let's go high bit rate.
They've come across the Sea of Fertility. Mare Nectaris. They're now coming up very close to Mare Nubium as they're swinging around the front of the moon. Still close together, Ken Mattingly is attempting to pilot the command module in closer for what's called station keeping with the lunar module. This puts them back in the same orbit.
You get the line of sight rate, you're going to have to thrust a little toward the moon.
That was John Young asking Ken Mattingly a question.
We can't hold high bit rate. Request you go back to low bit rate, Orion.
We couldn't quite get that in the static. In mission control, the controllers are patiently waiting, the flight controllers.
That's
Jerry
right,
Griffin in the saddle. In the flight seat.
It's up for me. It looks like it ought to be down for you.
That sounds pretty good, Ken.
Okay.
That was Charlie Duke exchanging a bit of pilot's instructions with Ken Mattingly. What Ken said, looks like up for me, down for you. They're just...
Orion, this is Houston. Could you give us a range and range rate readout?
We'll see how far apart they are now with range and range rate.
Okay, 4,900 feet, closing at 5.
Roger, 4,900, closing at 5.
That's closing just a little over a meter per second. About one and a little over 1.5 meters per second coming closer together. They're 4,900 feet apart. That's a bit, it's about 1,200 or 1,300 meters apart, drifting closer together. Ken Mattingly says, gee, this is expensive. He is, he's right. This is using a lot of rocket fuel, which they would prefer not to be using up at this time. Everything on board the command module is working properly except the direction of the thrust vector control, the direction of thrust for the main rocket engine. The fuel cells are working properly, so there's plenty of power. There's plenty of power, plenty of oxygen being supplied for the crew, in this case Mattingly at the moment. If they connect again, they would not be in the plight experienced by Apollo 13. They would have considerably more system capability for their comfort if a return to Earth is decided upon. The descent propulsion system engine on the lunar module could be used to send them out of orbit of the moon back toward Earth. They would have a relatively quite comfortable system to sail back to Earth on. Chris Kraft, the man who directed all of the earlier flights of America's men in space, and who really has been supervising all of the other flight directors and flight controllers ever since, has come into the control center. He's now the chief, now the director of the manned spacecraft center itself. He's now the number one man here in Houston. He's here talking with Jerry Griffin about the problem and the way they're working on it. As I think I said once before, there's a lot of brain power working here right now, both in the control center and in the support rooms out back and across the campus, as it's called, a couple hundred meters away, in the command module simulator, where people are working on the problem, trying to figure out what's wrong with the service propulsion system rocket.
And your line of sight rate is starting to build a little in the other direction. You've got it now.
John Young talking to Ken Mattingly. He says, you've got it now. I think you're getting in close to where you're supposed to be. That's what he means. The last reading, he was closing at about one and a little over 1.5 meters per second, and was some 1,200 meters away. I'm sure he's much closer than that.
Ryan, this is Houston. Is the CSM above you or below you? We hope he's directly ahead.
He's at 45 degrees above us.
45 degrees above.
Above the local vertical.
Casper's 45 degrees above the local vertical.
And he's got a 5 foot a second closing rate, and his line of sight are nulled on the radar.
Roger.
That was John Young reporting the relative position of the... On Casper, Ken Mattingly said it looks like it's killed on the optics. He can.
I mean, your tracker light here, a minute. You're just getting a little blinded sunlight now. Okay, thank you.
Ken Mattingly asked John to turn on his tracker light. John did. And Ken said, thank you. His little sun was glinting on the limb, apparently, or in his window, or in his own command module window, one or the other. Anyway, the tracking light helped. The rates are killed, according to, meaning that they're closing as they're supposed to, coming closer. Once the two vehicles are station keeping, then it would be very easy to dock them if necessary, to connect them up again for whatever eventuality might transpire, either continuation of an orbital mission or return to Earth.
That seems like a fair thing.
All right.
Mattingly and John Young talking to each other through just a little piece of space there, less than about a kilometer apart. Maybe less by now. It's quite important that the two craft be brought back for station keeping if there is a possibility that the decision would be made to join them together again, because as they go around in orbit around the moon, Each spacecraft is in a different orbit, a very slightly different orbit, and they would drift apart.
He can't. You're going to have
otherwise.
To press down here.
That's down to you, right?
As Ken has remarked, and as has John also, yeah, it's this is an expensive thing to do in energy required.
Yeah, I think I got it killed again.
Because the that's drifting rates of the two orbits have to be nulled or
right
taken
now?
Out.
Still 5 feet a second. Still off 3.5 feet a second now at 3,000.
3.5 feet per second.
In order that the spacecraft wouldn't drift apart as they go around on the backside of the moon.
Okay, you're going to have to thrust a little more to kill that rate the same way.
John Young talking to Ken Mattingly.
Okay, that got a lot of it, but not all of it.
That's John Young. That got a lot of it, but not all of it.
Okay, you got most of it.
Okay, you got
okay,
most.
Okay, Casper, this is Houston. You might pick up a temperature caution light on your quads, but it's of no consequence.
Okay, yeah, I see B is up high. Is that due to the thruster activity?
Affirmative, Ken.
Or is that due to heater fail on?
I think it's thruster activity.
Okay. Roger.
The thrusters are getting warm on the command module.
Ryan, this is Houston. Will you give us another range and range rate, John?
Yep. 3,100 feet at 3.5.
Roger, 3,100 at 3.5.
3,100 feet.
Roger, angle 68 degrees to local vertical now.
Understand, 68 degrees.
That means that Ken is still 1,000 meters away, 1 kilometer away, closing at just about 1 meter per second. Now it appears, since the last time we mentioned this, he was 1,200 meters away, closing at over a meter and a half a second. You would think he'd be closer than that by now, but that isn't the way it works in this orbital situation. He's not coming straight in. It isn't just a straight line closing.
Okay, kid, you got a slight rate going to the south, according to my needles.
John Young says you've got a slight rate going to the south, according to my needles. How's line of sight
hold
rate doing now? Yes.
The vertical one is holding right on.
Can range rate?
Range.
You're at 3,000 feet at 3 feet a second.
Okay.
2,800 feet.
Then we must be going in the right direction then.
Well, yeah, you're gonna get there.
Yeah.
Ken says, well, we must be going in the right direction.
You now have 2 milliradians to the south.
John says, you're going
to
get there.
I'll take some of that out. That means I go to the south, right?
Yep.
It's not quite as simple as driving a car. You've got
three
axes in which you can move, and you've got orbital energy, which you must cope with. Either put in or take out. That's the big bugaboo, is that great amount of energy that you have there when you're going, oh, let's see, orbital velocity is 6,600 feet per second over 1,000 meters per second, actually, that you're actually moving across the lunar surface in your orbital flight path.
You have 2 milliradians. Okay, that's got it, Kim.
Okay.
You're not dealing with lift in the air and changing your the way in which air sweeps past your wings, you're having to work with the inertial velocities, which are involve great amounts of energy, an energy transferal. You're listening to John Young and Ken Mattingly talk to each other as Mattingly is bringing the command module closer to the orbiting lunar module. As both spacecraft are orbiting the moon, the lunar landing has been postponed because of a problem in the command module main thruster engine. Mattingly is using the small RCS, reaction control system thrusters, to bring the mothership back close to the lunar lander. No decision has been made yet as to whether or not the landing will be made or whether the craft will connect or dock and then return toward the Earth. That decision must await a full analysis of the service propulsion system guidance problem. Several hundred people are working on that right now here in Mission Control. We're sure that they're working on it where the rocket is manufactured and where the guidance system is built in various parts of the United States. Out at the McDonnell Douglas Company in California, possibly. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which builds the inertial measurement unit, this computer-driven navigation system, the MIT Instrumentation Lab. Somewhere there's what's called an anomaly in the both the what actually beyond the automatic rocket system, the manual control of this big rocket and the direction of its thrust has also been impaired. This is the Voice of America broadcasting from the Manned Spacecraft Center as Apollo 16 is orbiting the moon, as astronauts John Young, Ken Mattingly, and Charles Duke are working with a problem which has developed in lunar orbit. As I mentioned earlier, the landing has been postponed temporarily. No decision has to be made. They have up to 5 revolutions of the moon, up to 10 hours, to resolve the problem or make the decision to return toward Earth, to bring the two spacecraft back together and return toward Earth. At the moment, Ken Mattingly is bringing the command module back for what is called station keeping. This means bringing the two craft into the same orbit around the moon so they will fly in formation, so to speak, as they orbit the moon, continue to orbit the moon. Mattingly's been having to use a good bit of thruster energy of his rocket fuel and is using his small RCS thrusters. You heard it reported that they're heating a bit, but this is not disturbing to the men in Mission Control. They even told Mattingly before he noticed the warning light himself. He's coming closer and closer. The last report we heard, he's about a little less than 1,000 meters away, closing at about 1 meter per second. Mattingly says he's showing a drift rate.
Yeah, I don't show any, and I've got you foresighted in that hole, and I don't show any motion there either, Ken.
John Young answered Mattingly.
Just a little south, Ken.
Okay, it looks like you've got almost taken that out.
This is Apollo Control. Flight Director Jerry Griffin has instructed the Capcom to tell the crew that at acquisition of signal on Rev 15, that's the start of the next revolution, they will be given a go-no-go for a landing on Rev 16. Hopefully by that time the situation will have resolved itself on the thrust vector control system, which drives the SPS. Apparently there's a problem in the yaw gimbal actuator in the service propulsion system.
We've been going the right direction all along.
The decision has not yet been made, and hopefully will be made prior to the time of acquisition of signal on Revolution 15. Some 19 minutes remaining in this 14th revolution. Add to that 47 minutes of backside pass and at the start of that rev, we'll either be go for landing or for immediate rendezvous, docking, and subsequent return home. This is Apollo Control at 100 hours, 51 minutes.
So it appears that we'll know one way or the other at a predictable time in the future at this point whether Apollo 16 is to land on the moon or not. Not just within that 10 hours of orbital time. They've decided that they will either have a go or a no-go for the lunar landing when the spacecraft go around the moon and come out on the other side. Some 46 minutes behind the moon and 19 minutes, which in addition to that, just a little over an hour, about an hour and 4 minutes from now. In 18 minutes, both spacecraft will disappear from sight behind the moon and will be out of touch with the Earth. And that message being passed up to John Young, Charlie Duke, and Ken Mattingly was that the engineers believe that they will make a go or a no-go decision by the time they are acquired as they come around the right or east limb of the moon during this next revolution.
There you go, it worked.
Something worked. John Young said to Ken Mattingly, there you go, it worked. Something he's doing as he is bringing the command module down closer in for station keeping, getting it into the same orbital path around the moon. That service propulsion system is a 20,000-pound rocket engine. That's how much thrust it can produce in a vacuum. It's about 1 meter wide, about 2 meters long. It's mounted in the center section of the service module. Ken Mattingly says he can see part of the dark side of the moon illuminated by Earthshine. This rocket has a nozzle extension, which is 3 meters long. It extends out the bottom. That's what's called the bell.
Hey, what's my range right now?
And this whole mechanism hinges on gimbals. And as you may have heard reported, something is wrong with the yaw gimbal actuator. So that means that the problem has been narrowed to the mechanical system supporting the main service propulsion system rocket. Not necessarily back up in all the black boxes, the electronics and the gyroscopic units which feed signals to it. That Ken Mattingly talking to John Duke. Can't hear what he's saying. He's talking so quietly there, just from one spacecraft or the other. It's just a bit difficult to understand what they're saying to one another. So still closing at 1 meter per second, 3 feet per second. The men in mission control still patiently waiting also for word to come in from outside, from the support rooms, on the complete analysis of what the problem is with this yaw gimbal actuator. That would mean the swing mechanism, which would cause the spacecraft to swing right or left as the pilot sits in his seat. That would be the yaw axis. Actually, there would be two axes, yaw and pitch, for this big engine. Could either from the position of the pilot sitting in his couch, it would either go up or down or sideways, because the thrust would always be forward. And the engine is mounted in such a way that it always should produce thrust through the center of gravity of the command module itself.
Okay.
Loss of signal is expected in 14 minutes from now. The spacecraft still going across the front side of the moon. They have now passed over, we believe, along the lunar equator, Mare Nectaris, the crater Theophilus Alphonsus, across Mare Nubium. Ken Mattingly said, looks like the old EMS, this is a readout device, is sitting here looking at itself, he said. Spacecraft now past Mare Humerum, part of the great ocean of storms area of the moon. The orbital flight path for this mission, because of the landing site being just a few degrees below the equator, the orbital flight path of Apollo 16 around the moon is very close to the equator. It never swings more than 2 or 3 degrees north or south of the equator, just a few degrees. Apollo 15 swung far to the north for its landing in Hadley, Apennine. That's Ken Mattingly, but the static is so bad I couldn't quite understand that, to share it with you, try to clarify it. He's talking to John Young as they're closing, coming closer together in orbit. He says the lunar module is barely drifting in his COAS. This is the optical alignment system, grid line, the grid markings on his windshield, out the command module pilot's windshield, in which he can see the lunar module. He says you're barely drifting in this grid marking on the window, or COAS. It's easy to understand why the mission rules, all laid out ahead of time for this sort of eventuality, would be very clear in their instructions to spacecraft on what they should do. If the service propulsion system engine doesn't work, then you must do this or do that. One of the mission rules would be you don't let the limb get too far away, because you want to use the descent propulsion system rocket or the ascent propulsion system rocket in order to assure propulsion to get back toward the Earth. The problem is on the guidance or the steering of the main rocket engine on the command module. Now, the static is caused by the drifting of antennas. The antenna alignment, we believe in this case, on the lunar module, the high-gain antenna, is not exactly aligned with the Earth. It drifts off just a bit as the LEM drifts across the moon in orbit. And the static comes and goes as one antenna or another is properly aligned with the Earth. So you've been hearing quite a bit of static, and right now it's pretty well burying the voices of Mattingly and Young and Duke as they talk to one another. They're just less than a kilometer apart, coming closer together for what is called station keeping, getting back into the exact same orbit.
Houston, we're showing about 10 minutes to LOS, and I have some words for you on our general plan when it's convenient.
Some instructions from Jim Irwin, the capsule communicator. Let's listen to what that would be.
Okay, when you come up on AOS on the next Rev 15, we'll give you a go or no go for another try, and we'd be looking at PDI on Rev 16, and at that time we'd have pads for you and procedures. Over.
Okay.
And Casper, this is Houston.
Ready?
Roger, we want you to verify that you're an auto dump on the water. That's pressure relief in the number two position. That's vertical. And if you have an opportunity to get away from the controls there, we'd like you to manually dump the water to 10% on the back side. That should require about 17 minutes. Over.
Autobilt, and I'll have to wait till we get the daylight to go down there, I think.
Okay, we copy.
About cooling as it is.
That's Jim Irwin telling Ken Mattingly some things he wants
Ken,
him to do.
The sight rate is starting to have to thrust down a little, or I mean up a little.
John Young, watching his radar tracking of the command module, is telling Kent which way he should go to get closer. 8 minutes until loss of signal, 8 minutes, 50 seconds. As the spacecraft, the two spacecraft, go behind the moon. It's just impossible to understand what they're saying right at this moment, because the one of the antennas, we presume it's the one on the lunar module, which hasn't been locked in properly, has drifted out of its alignment with the Earth. There are several other antennas, omnidirectional antennas, which are adequate for communication. The astronauts and mission control must switch from one of these to another. So even though the high-gain antenna did not lock, should it not lock in on the Earth, the landing could continue. However, if this service propulsion system gimbaling situation cannot be alleviated, this would
call Houston, we'd like you to configure for RCS Bravo only. Over.
Ken Mattingly is being asked to use only the RCS thruster system B, the second of the two reaction control system thruster units, for his the remainder of his closing with the LEM. Apparently the A system is getting a bit hot. There was a word a little while ago that there was a heating indication here on Earth, not believed to be dangerous or be endangering the continued operation of the thrusters. But now they've decided to cool one of the banks of reaction thrusters and to use the B system, as you heard that instruction. You see, the director of flight control, Gene Kranz, he is the chief of the flight controllers, and that means that all of the men in mission control are in part of his group here now, the Manned Spacecraft Center. Jerry Griffin, the flight director for this particular event. Others, Pete Frank and Phil Schaffer. They're waiting for the word from the support rooms on what may or may not be done with this thruster guidance system for the big rocket engine on the command module. 6 minutes until loss of signal, until the spacecraft go behind the moon. When they come out again, 40 minutes, 46 minutes after that, they will be given a go or no-go decision on the lunar landing. Quite staticky, the signal coming in. It's very difficult to hear, understand what Young and Duke are saying to each other because of this antenna alignment. They're all right. They're just getting Mattingly in the command module a little closer and a little closer very slowly, about 3 feet per second, about 1 meter per second. The last firm reading we had of how far apart they were was about 1 kilometer, about 1,000 meters. That then would mean some 300 seconds to get together. I think it's taking a little longer than that. This, let me reiterate again, that this particular problem with the thrust vector control in the rocket engine, even though it is connected to the computer navigation system through electronic, or black boxes as they're called, problem is not relative to the one encountered on launch day shortly after the astronauts started toward the moon out of Earth orbit, when the inertial measurement unit saw a glitch, as it's called, and locked up the gyros, or caged the gyros, misinterpreting what is called a gimbal lock. Now, in that case, the word gimbal is referring to gimbals in the gyro unit, in the inertial guidance system. The problem in this case is concerned with the yaw gimbal in the big rocket engine.